as we are advancing in this text, taking us to new heights of understanding, wisdom. As I was preparing today for this class, just reading these words of this chapter put me into a tremendous meditative state. And I would encourage everybody to, as they go home, after they go home, either tonight or tomorrow, read this chapter carefully at least 2 or 3 times. Most wonderful words of wisdom the Guru has given us. So the chapter is called Study, Japa and Meditation. Study, we all know. Japa means chanting the name of the Lord. And it can be any name. Can even be Om, or it can be Shiva or Jesus or Krishna or whatever, Guru. Divine name takes us to higher realms of peace and makes us aware of the Lord's name, of the Lord's form, of the Lord's qualities, and gives us extreme peace. So study is not only listening. Listening is one aspect and reading is one aspect. So listening and reading. But then study is when I myself get involved in the knowledge. So I internalize this knowledge. I make it my knowledge by repeated contemplation upon this. Also repeated listening is important, even though a lot of these ideas we have already heard. But every time we listen to this, even this, whatever is in this particular chapter, I've heard many times before, but when it comes from the mouth of a master teacher, then somehow that the words carry a great power, especially as you know, we do have acharyas or teachers coming here every month. And in their presence, the same words carry a great power. So there is a power in the words of the teacher, because the teacher who is teaching not only should know the subject, but should internalize, should himself or herself be established in the truth. Then only the teachings carry any meaning. Otherwise, there's no difference between a university professor who has studied Sanskrit and can chant and can teach and will bring PhD students and teach them. And that's the difference between a PhD student or a PhD teacher or a professor and a Swami or a wise person who is established in this truth. So we listen, we study ourselves, and chanting. What does chanting do? It brings my mind from many thoughts to one thought. And that's why in our meditation steps, we have stepwise. You close your eyes, you relax your body, you observe your breath, and you chant the name. So breath observation or breathing, pranayama techniques, and chanting of the mind, chanting of the word, chanting of the name of the Lord brings the attention from many to one, and that is the name of the Lord. And that is very essential if my mind is to stay in meditation, if my mind is running in 1,000 places, which it does when we sit down, then it's not going to be very fruitful. So through these preliminary steps, we come to the process of meditation. And meditation we have talked about many times, but these 3 steps are a practical stairway to the highest truth. Because the goal of a meditator is not just to calm the mind, not just to quieten the mind. Even a psychiatric drug can do that. Alcohol can do that. Calming up the mind is a byproduct of meditation. It's not the goal of meditation. The mind becomes calm as we meditate, but the purpose of meditation is to go to the highest, and that is discover the divinity become within and become one with that. That divinity which is not only within me but is everywhere, and that is me, and complete identification is the highest goal of meditation. So what is meditation? Becoming one with that truth. Now the mind runs. So this particular section is not in this chapter, but I thought I would add that just to tell us how to quieten the mind. So there are six steps: control of the mind, control of the senses, withdrawal, forbearance, faith, and constancy. So the senses run out when I see something, or when I hear something, or smell, or taste, or touch. I get joy in that, and then the mind runs out and wants more and more. Or I get sorrow when I see something or hear something and the mind wants to run away. Either way, the mind gets disturbed. The mind either runs out or gets agitated. And so we have to learn to control the senses, not let them run out into the world of objects, because the senses will do that. And that can only happen when the mind is controlled. And how do we control the mind? By withdrawal. So you slowly withdraw and do not depend on the world to give me happiness. Do not depend on objects to give me happiness, because happiness is within. And along with withdrawal comes forbearance. Now this is a very beautiful word, forbearance, and I wanted to spend a little bit of time on it. We think of forbearance as just silently suffering whatever is going on. You know, if somebody says something harsh, I just suffer it without complaint. Or something bad is happening, or there is a pain in my body, or there is some mental disturbance, I just suffer it. That's not forbearance. If my mind inside is agitated, is angry, is upset at whatever is happening, it could be a situation, it could be a person, it could be even my own body causing me pain or my mind being disturbed. If I am getting disturbed or agitated or angry, even though outwardly I am very polite, I am very friendly, but inside, then that is not forbearance. True forbearance is that I do not even feel the pain of that. And my mind is utterly calm. No matter what problems are coming, it could be physical problems, it could be relational, situational problems, could be relational problems, financial problems. Problems will be there and I take care of them. But inside, I am not disturbed. Nobody can disturb that peace of mind, no matter what problems come. And that is true forbearance. So the inner quietude of mind that develops in a seeker. Talking about problems coming, you know that in marriage, there are three rings. You know, there are three rings. There is the engagement ring. There is the wedding ring, and then the suffering. So no matter what sorrows come, no matter what the problems of the world, whether it's my spouse, my child, my boss, my relations, and even physical pain, and when I'm able to bear it without complaint, and that is forbearance. And that can only happen when I have total faith in God. That there is an almighty power who is with me at all times and constantly helps me and takes care of me. And that complete faith one has to have. Because ultimately, how are we able to breathe? How are we able to talk? How are we able to walk? There is a divine power taking care of us constantly. Who is providing air for us and rain and all the comforts and the fruits, beautiful fruits in the trees and the crops, everything is there for our enjoyment because of that one Lord. So constantly remember the presence and constantly make it my goal that I have to know this. Who is this truth? How am I to reach? How am I to know? So that strong desire has to develop. That I have to reach that, and constancy in practice, constancy in meditation. So when you study, when you chant the name of the Lord, when your knowledge is clear, then you sit for meditation. That has to be done constantly. Meditation cannot be a once a week activity, cannot be If I have time, I'll do it. Cannot be even a 15 or a 20 minute activity. In the beginning, yes. But as I talked last week, minimum 1 hour every day, I must meditate. Without that, progress is not going to be possible. I'm not trying to discourage you, but encourage you that the more you do it, the more you will enjoy that. If you don't have 1 hour in the morning, maybe half an hour in the morning, half an hour in the evening. But generally, 1 hour constantly in the morning is the best. Wake up a little bit early, set your alarm. And what will happen is, as you progress, it's an amazing, amazing experience that your mind gets filled with peace and joy. It's like there is this current of joy arising from within, and you don't know where it is coming from and why am I getting it? What is the cause of this? It's unexplained joy. It's 5 o'clock in the morning. I have not eaten anything. I have not done. Why am I so happy? Why? Because I have discovered the joy within. And the example I have given before also is that, say I need the city to turn on its water and then I can get water. Of course, here water comes constantly, but in some places water is not available. And so they have, you know, the city sometimes turns on the water, sometimes they turn it off because there's a shortage of water. And so you have to wait for the time when the water comes so you can fill up your buckets. And a lot of parts of the world, they live like that. So they depend on the city to send the water. But suppose this person who is depending on the city water finds a well underneath his house. And he digs there and finds a well of water. He says, wow, I have my own source of water. If the city gives water, fine, I can use it. If it doesn't, I put a pump and I can tap the water within. So similarly, you and I, we are begging this world to give me a little bit of joy. Give me some objects to make me happy. Give me some love. Give me some success. So we are beggars of joy, beggars of peace. But once we discover this joy within us, this Om, this consciousness, it's like I've discovered my own well of joy. Then I do not need anything or anybody to give me joy. It does not mean that I become a recluse. As I said, if the city is giving water, I use it. So if somebody is giving me joy, I enjoy it. But if somebody is not, I am joy. I am bliss. Not even joy, not even pleasure, but I am bliss, the highest happiness. And that you will experience with regular meditation. This inner well of spring of joy arises, extreme peace, holiness. It's a wonderful experience. And what that does, it will encourage you to be more regular in your meditation, more regular in your study, more regular in listening to this truth, more regular in chanting. So because you have, it's like you have gotten a glimpse of that profound, sublime joy. So once you have got the glimpse, then you want more and more. And then nobody has to tell you to get up in the morning and meditate. You'll do it yourself. Nobody has to tell you, study this literature. You will do it yourself. Nobody has to tell you, take a mala or a rosary and chant the name of the Lord. You will do it yourself. And gradually, once this person is more regularly meditating, he or she enters with extreme devotion the truth. Truth is not only truthfulness in his or her dealings with the world, but an experience of the truth within. The truth, the self, the what is, the divinity. So that contact with that truth is what we mean. So this such a person's life becomes truthful on the outside, and on the inside, he or she experiences truth. And truth is constancy in what I think, what I say, and what I do should be all one. That is the external truth. Inner truth is the essence of the isness of who I am. And that can happen when we have devotion to this path and devotion to the Lord, and then we avoid activities that cause mental fatigue. See, what causes me mental fatigue? When I overindulge, I overdo it, whether it's eating or talking too much or too much contact with people or too much running into the world, shopping and acquiring and possessing, person becomes content. He says, I don't need all this. I have enough. So slowly such a person's needs become less. See, there is one thing is called need and one is called want. Not only this person's wants become less, even his needs become less. I don't need any more clothes. I don't need any more jewelry. I don't need a newer model of car. I don't need a bigger house. Why? Because he has realized that these objects will only give me limited pleasure. How long will this thing give me pleasure? I need to find permanent, everlasting joy and bliss, and that can come only in permanent, everlasting objects within. So, avoiding this mental fatigue slowly makes this person retire. Retire does not mean he or she gives up work, but reduces unnecessary work, reduces unnecessarily contact with people. Just picking up the phone and calling somebody, or just going parties. All of these things that take my mind away, you know, staying late at night out. No, why? Because tomorrow morning I have to get up at 5 and meditate. I'm not going to stay out till 10, 11, 12. If you get invited to somebody's party, at least what we do, so if it's important, if it's somebody's anniversary or a wedding or birthday or something, what we do is we go there, give the gift to the bride or whatever, groom, and then have the appetizers and leave, because the appetizers are served at 6:37. So by 8 o'clock, you get out. There's so many people, you meet them. And afterwards, sometimes the host and hostess doesn't even know. Indian parties, they have 200, 300 people. So they don't, once they have seen your face, you have come, you have given the gift, then get out. Why do we need to stay till dinner and stay till all the speeches? And so much waste of time. And then if I'm going to stay out late, how am I going to get up in the morning and meditate? So retire. Retire means slowly withdraw from all these things. Because my goal is something different. My goal is no longer external. My goal is internal. So the internal peace is what I am experiencing. And as I withdraw from this world of objects, emotions and thoughts and go inward to the world of Om, they say that I have not experienced it, I tell you the truth, but they say that you experience wonderful subtle realms of extreme joy and extreme peace and extreme bliss. And this is not a temporary. See, our joy is temporary. Maybe my mind becomes still for a while, or maybe I eat something, or maybe I get something and I get that. But this wise person, the Buddha or the Christ or the Guru Nanak or the Shankaracharya or Swami Chinmayananda, these masters, the realms that they have experienced is constant contact. In one place in the Gita, the Lord says, he says, yad gatva na nivartante tad dham parama mama. He says that once the wise person has gone to that realm of mine, the Lord says, then he or she never returns. So spirituality, Gurudev says, is a one-way street, entry only. Once I enter this realm and then I slowly experience that, it needs constant practice. It's not going to happen overnight. It's not going to, because we have years of vasanas, we have lifetimes of vasanas. But with constant effort, slowly you're able to dissolve the vasanas. Slowly you're going to fill your mind with peace, fill your mind with joy, and with regular devotion to this process, you will reach. We all will reach. If our desire is strong, if our effort is sincere, And the Lord himself helps. In the Gita, again, Krishna says that a person whose mind is constantly dwelling upon me, the Lord, and constantly thinking about the Lord and constantly working to reach that goal, then the Lord himself or herself, if you believe in the Mother Goddess, but it's the Lord who lives us and becomes, makes us one with him. So our effort is to go up to a particular point in our meditation where we experience this inner peace and joy, and then just wait. Then just keep your mind still, and slowly, the more effort you put in this direction, the more you will experience this I, this oneness. And for that, I have to give up everything, even my body identification, that I am this body. That also I have to give up. Not only this, my mind stressful, not only my intellectual achievements, not only my mental disturbance, but even the idea that I am this body has to be given up. So when the mind has become still, then even the body experience goes away. At that time, I don't know whether I'm a male or female. I can't even feel my body, and all I can feel is the inner joy. So that identification with the body has to be given up. Otherwise, the body will keep on creating problems. One day it has some pain. One day it has some discomfort. One day my mind is disturbed. One day I am confused. So constantly the body, the mind, the intellect will give us problems if we allow it to. But if I become one with that Om, the consciousness, and then this body, mind and intellect is just my equipment, and they cannot affect me, just as my car is my equipment, cannot affect me. If my car tomorrow is broken, it's okay. I just go get it fixed or buy a new car. I don't say I am the car, but I am the driver of the car. So I am the body. This absolutely has to be given up. I am the driver of this body. I drive this body, which I take here and there, which does my work. But I am Om. I am that consciousness. So that has to become very clear. So if somebody wakes you up and says, who are you? You don't say, I am Penny or I am Tony. But I am that consciousness. I am that. That should become firmly ingrained in our thoughts. And with practice, it will happen. So before you sit for meditation, you ask for the Lord's grace. Lord, I am going to be with you for the next hour. Please make sure my mind doesn't wander and make me one with you. So that meditation has to start with humility, with gratitude, with an attitude of prayerfulness. And then we reach the state of samadhi. So the word samadhi, people misunderstand as person who is sitting in meditation and becomes one with God. Yes, that is samadhi, but true samadhi is constant experience that I am that divinity, I am that Om. Not temporary in meditation, where we may experience for a while this oneness, but a wise person is always in samadhi. When somebody asked Gurudev, how long should we meditate per day? He said, only 24 hours. You should meditate 24 hours a day. It does not mean that you sit 24 hours, don't take a bath, don't eat, don't cook. No, we don't mean that. What he meant was that 24 hours a day, your understanding should be that I am that self, I am that consciousness. And then no matter what this person is doing, again in the Gita, the Lord says, whether he's eating, whether he's drinking, whether he's walking, whether he's talking, whether he's dealing with people, or whether he's by himself, this idea that I am this consciousness never leaves this person, and that is called samadhi. So, constant awareness of the Lord's presence is the goal, not only in meditation but throughout the day. Be aware, and that can only happen with repeated reminders. In the beginning, when we get caught up in the work, it becomes very difficult. But A, full attention to the work, and then B, awareness subtly that there is, and you can put reminders. You can put a little picture of the Lord in your car on your dashboard, so that when you start driving, oh Lord, be with me, in your kitchen, in your house, in your office, on your desk, on your phone. See, that's another wonderful way. Make the wallpaper of the phone the Lord's form, the Lord's, you know, presence, om, or whatever you want. So that every time you turn on your phone or look at your phone, you should remember. And if it's one particular form, say it's Jesus or Guru Nanak or Krishna or Shiva, you can change that periodically because you get so used to that one particular picture. But the same Lord's picture, if you go on the internet and you Google Jesus images, you'll find 100 of them. So pick one and then maybe every month or so change it so that again it reminds you, oh, it's something new. Otherwise the mind says, okay, yeah, this I've seen before. So keeping that same Lord, it's not that you keep changing the Lord, but or God's form, but whichever form you do, just get different images of that. And so that way, different colors, different, sometimes small, sometimes big. So constant remembrance. So this chapter, again, I would urge you, go home and please read it carefully. Read it at least two or three times. As we go deeper into this text, it's such a marvelous. Literally, when I was preparing for this, I was reading it. Took me into meditation. I had a hard time finishing the chapter because I just wanted to close my eyes and enjoy that peace. But I had to, because I had to prepare. But it's most wonderful. And I'm so grateful to the teacher and to all of you that I'm able to share this wisdom. So any questions, any comments?
One thing that I would like to share is
sure.
We always meet a lot of many people around us. The best thing that where we can start practicing is if somebody is a trouble creator around you, start looking at that person as if that person is driving you towards your ultimate goal. And when you start doing that, the feeling about that person is hurting me or he is a problem creator for me goes away of it. The moment that happens, your mind goes free from all those thoughts and all those worldly matters, and you come back to yourself. And that is when you start doing your own job, even when the results start coming very fast.
Yes.
It changes unimaginable. Whenever you feel that, so never bring a feeling of that. Okay, I want to forgive that person. As soon as you bring that in your mind, it gives you a feeling that I'm one of them, that person. I'm better than that person. So I'm forgiving. That is where the ego comes. That ego never lets you go.
Very nice. Thank you. Very well said. Very well said. I think, like he said, every person we meet, it's not an accident. Every person, including our spouse, including our child, including friends, whoever we meet, and even enemies or people who are creating problems, they're all there for a particular purpose. This divine Lord, the divine consciousness is pushing us towards itself. And so look at every opportunity as an opportunity to grow. Even problem situations can become. And there is a hidden power that is working for us that is bringing us. And so, like he said, even somebody giving problems, there is a reason for that. Because there is something in me that needed to be fixed. Just as a doctor may give you a painful injection or do some surgery on you to remove some cancerous growth. Now, the surgery may be painful, but it is meant for your benefit. So similarly, that painful situation, as he said, where this person is given, is the surgery that is happening for my growth, for my improvement. So you have to look at everything. Thank you for bringing that point. I really appreciate it.
I've really experienced that. Yes. I'm an IT professional. So since many years I was just focusing on what I wanted. My brother was telling me that he learned about the technology, that he used everything. I thought that, okay, I'm stable in this. No need to do it. I recently moved to Bakersfield and then was coding group project on a technology which I never knew. And there was an expert person of more than 10 years of experience. She always used to criticize me. She always tried to tell me that you're not, you know, don't know anything about it. And in front of me, in front of the entire team, she used to criticize me. So, and whenever she criticizes, I will go away from there, do that work, come back, and I'm again talking to her with no grudges or no bad feelings for her. That brought me into that technology to so high level without devoting special time in learning that, that I am nothing that needed. So when you get a feeling that this person is not a good person, immediately you start building or you start grasping his bad thinkings and everything.
Mm-hmm.
So, if you give a good feeling, you get it.
Right. That's good. Thank you.
The truth is, telling the truth, some people, I mean, I noticed it, it's very hard, like a if you tell the lie, you can get by with that.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes when you tell the truth, the people get hurt. I mean, it's just the... Some people, they just tell the...
Tell what it is,
then it creates a lot of issues.
Right. In the
community, sometimes.
Yes.
I mean, I notice some people, they say something, we just don't want to make a big issue out of it. Everybody will get hurt and all that, but next time you won't do like this.
I think that's a very good point, because in the Gita, when the Lord talks about speech, he said speech should be three things: truthful, pleasing, and beneficial. So what I say should be truthful. At the same time, it should be pleasant. I should not be rough with people. And it should be beneficial. And in a certain situation, for example, say there is a girl who comes running and she says, you know, this man is chasing me and he wants to molest me, he wants to, and please to show me a place to hide. And you say, okay, go hide behind the bush. Now she's hiding and this man comes and says, have you seen this girl, you know, this wearing a blue dress and running? Now if you say, tell the truth, yeah, she's hiding behind the bush. And you know, no, what you will tell him is, yeah, I saw her running. She ran that way, go this way and you'll find her. So what you're saying is not the truth, but it is in that situation, it is beneficial. So it should be satyam, priyam, hitam. It should be truthful. It should be pleasant. We should not be rough in our speech with people. And we should speak what is beneficial to all. So, but generally, yes, by and large, truth should be practiced. But there should be some discretion, like somebody has bought a new dress. Now it doesn't look very nice on her. Or she has had her hair cut and it. So you don't just go and tell them, oh, that's a very ugly dress, or who cut your hair? No, you don't do that. You say, oh, you know, it's fine. I mean, you don't go all out and praise, but if she asks you, how is my hair or how is my dress? You say, yeah, it's good. If you like it or something like that, but being polite, where you don't hurt the other person's feelings. So truth should be pleasant and it should be beneficial. So our speech should be very careful. Very, very. So all those three factors have to be there. Is it true? Is it pleasing? And is it beneficial to all? Satyam, Priyam, and Hitam. That is the Sanskrit words. Is that similar to what you were thinking? Yes.
One of the gurus says that there was a person who was complaining to the guru that there is so much bad going across the world. There are so many wars going across the world. There are so many people cheating each other. And Guru said, just replied to that person saying that how many spots on the earth can you spot where the wrong things are going? He said maybe thousands somewhere. I said, what about the rest of the spots where everything is going good? It's just about our vision, what we look at. So there is always a positive side and a negative side. If we focus on the positive side, we don't see anything negative. When we pass on a message to anyone, it will always be a positive, always be a good part of each and every person. And that takes care of not passing on the wrong thing or not criticizing it.
So we can do some breathing. So let us, today we'll be chanting Om, because we're talking about chanting. So we first put our fingers above the forehead, above the eyebrows on the forehead, and close the right nostril with the thumb, and through the left nostril, take 5 to 7 deep breaths, slow in and out, and pay attention to the gap between in-breath, out-breath. Out breath, in breath. Now close the left nostril with the ring finger and breathe in and out through the right nostril 5 to 7 times, slow and deep, and pay attention to the gap. Pause between inspiration, expiration, and then expiration and inspiration. Don't just breathe quickly in and out. Now alternate, breathe in through the right, pause, breathe out through the left, breathe in through the left, pause, breathe out through the right, alternate. Slowly bring your hands down, either on the knees or in the lap. Start breathing normally, but attention should remain on the breath. we can chant Om 3 times audibly, 3 times whisper, and then chant mentally, slow and long. Pay attention to the silence. Now 3 times just whisper where only you can hear it. Now continue to chant Om mentally, slow, long and deep chants. Slowly lengthen the gap in between the chanting, and ultimately let your mind merge into the silence. Become one with that silence within. Ultimately, the chanting ends, and that alone remains.